We are absolutely delighted to be here with you and to have you here. We've been looking forward to it. We've been praying about this. We are thrilled that you are here, and we're looking forward to a great weekend together. Before we begin, let's all stand and let's have a word of prayer. Our Heavenly Father, we pause now to present to you our lives as individuals and as couples, and we would unitedly invite you through your Spirit to work in our lives in whatever way you desire. We just want to open our hearts to you this weekend. We want to be sensitive to the still small voice of the Spirit of God who desires to speak to us. I pray, Father, that you would enable us to put away from our minds all of the many distractions that could enter our thoughts during this weekend and detract us from that which you want to do and want to say in our lives. And so, Father, help us just to relax, to have a good time, to enjoy one another's fellowship, to enjoy your fellowship, and to share with one another what you have for us. We thank you for this weekend. We believe that you have planned it from eternity past and that you have a purpose for each one of us being here. And may each of us leave having found out without any reservation or doubt why you brought us here. So we leave this in your hands and pray these things in the name of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. Amen. Someone here cannot follow instructions very carefully. This is a blank, one of those blank cards. I want you to look at that. Can you? Those of you in the back probably can't pick it up, but you know, we were told to put one number on it. Now there's a big five here. There's a whole row of fives here. There's a row of fives there. There's a five and a heart there. A five and a heart there, a five and a heart there, and a five and a heart there. You know what number five seminar is? It's for women. So I know that's got to be a woman that did that. I think it's fantastic. She's obviously very much in love. I mean, four hearts, you know, and all those fives. I think that is terrific. Dave, you ought to frame that. Carol and I have been married for 36 years. We celebrated our 36th wedding anniversary last September the 3rd. And each one of those 36 years has gotten better. And I don't say that just because we're doing a married seminar. I say that from my very heart because both of us feel that way. And we are convinced that marriage is the greatest institution that was ever invented. And, of course, God invented it. So he knew what he was doing. However, we've been around enough married couples and groups like this to realize that not everyone here feels the same way about marriage that we do. Because we're really excited about it. And it's one of the reasons that we feel it's a privilege for us to be able to share a weekend like this with you. But we know that there are some of you here who are hurting and that you have come for answers, and hopefully we will be able to help just a little bit in answering some of the questions that you might have and perhaps even having a part in healing some of the hurts. But of course, it's going to have to be the Lord that does that. And we have been praying and trusting the Lord that he would bring everybody to this conference that he wanted here, and that he has a purpose for bringing each of us here, including Carol and me. We have done this thing, this seminar, I guess, over 100 times in various places here in the U.S. and various countries overseas. And hardly a time goes by but what we leave a seminar that we've done that we're either driving home or on an airplane, and we'll turn to one another and say, you know, we talked about this or that, communications or telling one another that we love each other, or working on our love relationship with each other. We need to work on that some. And we'll discuss it. We'll take some time right then after the seminar on the way home and do that. We're a long way from being perfection as far as marriage is concerned. We feel we're still learners. We feel that that's the whole theme that God has in mind for marriage. It's one of the purposes for which He created marriage. It's to learn from each other. I think the verse that probably describes the marriage relationship better than any other is Proverbs 27:17. Iron sharpens iron, and one person sharpens another. And that's what it's really all about, is going through life, rubbing shoulders and elbows with each other as a husband and a wife, and being open to one another and learning from each other, and as a result of that, growing and becoming a better person. And folks, if we're not doing that, we are missing one of the greatest opportunities that has ever been presented to us. Dr. David Hubbard, who is the president of Fuller Theological Seminary, said this about marriage. He says, marriage does not demand perfection. I'm glad for that. But it must be given priority. And that's where many of us slip up, giving it priority. It is an institution for sinners. No one else need apply. But it finds its fullest glory when sinners see it as God's way of leading us to His ultimate curriculum of love and righteousness. His ultimate curriculum of love and righteousness. Now leave it to a seminary president to couch it in, you know, classroom terminology, a curriculum. But that's what Carol and I have found to be true. It is. It is a classroom. We're in school every day. If we are really giving priority to our relationship with our mate, to our marriage, if we're giving it the priority that it needs and deserves and that God wants us to, we're in school every day. We're learning from one another. We are becoming different people day by day, slowly, over the years, as we observe one another and learn from each other. A year ago last summer, Carol and I were in Great Britain for about 6 weeks. Most of that was for ministry opportunities, and then we took a little vacation at the end and celebrated our 35th wedding anniversary. We have given up trying to celebrate our anniversary on September the 3rd because we're usually in a situation that we can't do it. So we just have decided to celebrate all year long. So any occasion, like going out to dinner, that is an anniversary celebration, and we just have a great time. So we celebrated all year long. And so we had about 10 days free after we had been in Scotland with a group of Scottish couples, and we were in Glasgow for about 10 days and ended the time over at a little conference grounds on the west coast of Scotland with a group of couples about half the size of this group. And it was just a phenomenal time. We had great weather, if you can believe it. On Saturday, the sun was just gorgeous, bright, warm, and we had a wonderful time with them. Then after that was over, we were going to take a little holiday and play some golf, and you can't go to Scotland without playing golf. It's the home of golf, for those of you who don't know that. It's where it all was invented. And so we had rented a car, and it was a station wagon type of thing. And after we had been on the road for one day, I discovered that the back door would not open, where you get into the luggage compartment and store all your suitcases and golf clubs and that type of thing. And so for a couple of days, as we were making our way around Scotland, I was throwing the luggage over the back seat into that thing, and it was a mess. The third morning, we were checking out of this little hotel, and I asked the guy behind the desk if there was a garage that I might go to get this thing fixed, and he told me, yeah, down the road. And so we drove down there, and I talked to the fella, and he says, yeah, I think I can fix it. There's no problem. I said, how long will it take? He said, oh, probably half an hour. Well, there was a little abbey, a church across the street from this garage, and it was a beautiful, old thing. Everything in Scotland is old. And so I suggested to Carol, I said, honey, why don't you go over there and look around, and I knew she would enjoy that type of thing, and come on back in about a half an hour, we'll be ready to go. And so she did, and a half an hour later, she comes back across the street, the door has been fixed, and I am arranging all of our luggage, and our suitcases and the golf clubs very neatly in the back of the car and getting the thing kind of straightened out. And so as she comes back across the street, she says to me,
"Why don't you leave that till later?"
"Because I want to get it straightened out right."
"Well, don't get mad at me."
"Well, you always argue with me."
I walked away.
And she walked away. Now, that actually happened. I mean, here we had been married now almost 36 years. And it was a bright, beautiful, sunshiny morning in Scotland. And we had all of Scotland to conquer. And we start out the day that way. Well, she walked off in a huff, and I was a little huffy. And she came, I finally got the door shut, and we climbed in the car and went on our way. And in about 5 minutes, she started chuckling. And then I started laughing at us, at each other. Because we began to realize what we had done. Now, if that had happened, that same little thing. See, we only made four statements to one another. And in those four statements, we had violated three basic principles of good interpersonal relationships. Amazing. But if that same thing had happened to us 20 years ago, it would have taken us all day to get it straightened out. I mean that literally. See, you see, we've grown over the years. We had the thing solved in 20 minutes. And, you know, we went on and we had a glorious day. But I know that there are some of you sitting here who go through the same type of thing. And the question is, how do you handle that type of thing? Now, let me tell you what the three things were that we violated. The first one was, you remember what Carol said when she came back across the street, and here I was putting the luggage in the back of the car. She said, "Why are you doing that now?" How many of you enjoy being asked a question like that under those circumstances, especially one that starts out with "why"? Huh? How many of you like that? Well, I'll tell you, I don't. I don't think any of us do. Why? You know why? Because it's an intimidating type of question. It's threatening. What the person is really saying is when they say, "Why are we going this way?" "Why are you wearing that tie with that suit?" You know what they're really saying? They're saying, "I wouldn't go this way. I wouldn't wear that tie with that suit. The colors don't match. It stinks." You see, what they're really saying is, "You're not doing it my way." So that's the first thing that we violated. The first basic principle of a good interpersonal relationship is to avoid why questions of that kind. Now, that's a simple little thing, but yet all of us do it. Carol and I still do it, but we're working on it. Someday we're going to get there, but we're still working on it. The second thing that we violated was right at the tail end, and this was my deal. You remember what I closed with? "You always argue with me." Well, now, she doesn't always argue with me. Just some of the time. I think that the word "always" and the word "never" are two words that we need to use with great discretion. Probably never. Hardly anything is that absolute. So, you know, we try to steer away from that, but in a heated moment like that one was, why, it came out. I knew better, but it just came out. So we're still working on it. The third thing is a little more complex, the third thing that we violated, and that was that we had forgotten what each other are like. And this is the very thing that we want to get at tonight, is the differences that can exist between us as a husband and a wife. Not because we're men and women, but simply because we're different people. You see, I tend to be a perfectionist. Those of you who live with perfectionists, I admire you greatly. You have one of the greatest chores in life to cope with if you live with a perfectionist, especially one that has not begun to modify that perfectionism, and they stick with it, and they're really, you know, it's really ingrained in them. Now, I have changed a little bit over the years. Now, I don't know whether you've ever stopped to think about it, but what is the opposite of a perfectionist? Carol is the opposite of a perfectionist. I have never been able to come up with what I consider to be a really good word, but because Carol isn't sloppy, that's not the right word. Carol is fast. So I'm a perfectionist, and Carol is fast. Now, in that little incident there in Scotland, when she came back across the street, and we had that little to-do, four exchanges of words, we both forgot what each other were like under the circumstances. See, why was I straightening out the trunk and getting the luggage all squared away and the golf clubs fixed up? Huh? Why was I doing that? Because I tend to be a perfectionist. I'd been living with this mess for 2.5 days now, and I was tired of it, and so I wanted to get it all neatly straightened out. Carol, on the other hand, had been standing around looking at this abbey for a half an hour. When she came back across the street, let's go! I mean, fast Carol. She wanted to get the show on the road. And so that's what caused the exchange, because we are different in that area. Now, there are two things that we're going to be stressing during the weekend as we talk about various subjects. And these two things are going to show up, and they're just going to creep into our discussions with you from time to time, that we feel are absolutely imperative in any marriage relationship to really make it go and grow. Those two things, number one, is we got to work at it. Now, see, the way we worked at that little incident in Scotland, once we climbed in the car, and we began to chuckle about it and realized what a dumb little thing it was to get mad over what it was that we got mad over, because it was so irrelevant to what we were really in Scotland for. And so after we left, we began to talk about it. Why did Carol say what she did? Why did I say what I did? How were we feeling about it? What emotions were we going through? And so for the next half hour or so, we had an interesting little discussion dissecting that incident. And what it resulted in was we learned from it. We probably would not do that again, given the same set of circumstances. We'd handle it differently simply because we talked it through and analyzed it. Now, that's the type of thing that I'm referring to when I say working at your relationship. It's just one little thing that we can do to work. And we're going to talk more about that later in the whole area of communications when we get to that tomorrow. But it is absolutely necessary that we give priority. As Dr. Hubbard said, we've got to give priority. And part of that priority is working at our relationships. I mean, some of us, we fall in love, we get married, and we think that, you know, we're going to live on love the rest of our lives. That's why we entitled our book, Marriage Takes More Than Love. It does take love, but it takes a whole lot more than love. And one of the things that it takes more of than just love is we've got to work at it. We've got to give it some time. We've got to give it some priority. And we're going to be coming at that from various angles during this time with you. The second thing that we think is absolutely essential is that we give God His rightful place in our marriage relationship. Marriage is like a triangle. God is here at the top of the triangle. Here is the husband and here is the wife. And one of the things that the husband and the wife as individual people need to work at constantly is developing their in-depth relationship with their Lord, with God through His Word, through Jesus Christ, getting to know Him better and better. There's a passage over in Jeremiah 9:23 and 24 that talks about this very thing. It says, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches, but let him that glory, glory in this, that he knows and understands me, that I am the Lord, which exercise loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith the Lord. On the top of God's priority list for you and for me is to develop an understanding and a knowledge of Him, who He is, how He responds to us, what He is thinking, what are His thoughts and words and ideas. And of course, the primary way that we do that is through His Word, is spending time in His Word. Jeremiah 9:23-24. Tremendous passage of Scripture. And Carol and I are convinced, after 36 years of marriage, that one of the priorities that must be in our lives is continuing individually, me as a husband, she as a wife, to develop that daily relationship with God, of getting to know Him better and better and better and better. I'm doing a little Bible study with a fellow that I meet with about once every 2 or 3 weeks. We get together at 6:30 in my office for Bible study. And this last Thursday, that was yesterday morning, we were going over Philippians 3:10, that I may know Him and the power of His resurrection and the fellowship of His suffering, being made conformable unto His death. And we discussed that. And what the little book that we're using pointed out that when Paul wrote those words, he was 60 years old. And yet he was still saying to these beloved people in Philippi to whom he was writing, that I may know Him. I want to get to know Him better and better and better and better as the days go by. I think one of the things that we forget is that God invented marriage. It was His idea. I think it's a fantastic idea. But I run into people all the time who, and we get talking about marriage and their relationship with their mate, and it's very obvious in a very short period of time that they've completely forgotten that God has anything to do with the subject of marriage, and it was His idea in the first place. Now, if it's His idea, the better we get to know Him and what He's got to say in this book, the better marriage partner we are going to be. And I'm not just talking about the passages in the Bible that talk just about marriage. I'm talking about passages in the Bible that talk about us being a better person, because the better person we become, the better mate we're going to be to the person we're married to. We're going to be more loving. We're going to be more thoughtful. We're going to be more kind. We're going to be more understanding. And so those two things are absolute priorities as far as we are concerned in the development of a rewarding, fulfilling, growing marriage relationship, is first of all, working at it, giving it time, giving it priority, and secondly, giving God His rightful place in that marriage relationship, getting to know and understand Him better as the days go by. Because that is another factor involved in that, by the way, is if you notice in this triangle, the closer the husband and the wife get to the Lord, the closer they're going to get to one another. It's inevitable. I've seen it happen again and again and again in marriage relationships. When the husband and the wife both have committed themselves to the proposition, we're going to get to know God better. And they do it. And that draws them closer together. They become better and better friends. They become better and better husbands and wives. So those two things. Now, the thing that we want to concentrate the rest of the evening on, how you doing, by the way? How you feeling? Are you tired, worn out? We're supposed to quit at 9 o'clock. What I'm really asking is, can we go a little over? And I don't want to do it if you're tired. But the best is yet to come, because Carol hasn't spoken yet, and she's going to get up here in just a moment. What am I getting? Am I getting this or am I getting this? Okay, all right, fine. I just don't want to do anything that will put you to sleep. You won't go to sleep listening to her, I know that. Someone asked me to name the time our friendship stopped and love began. Oh, my darling, That's the secret. Our friendship never stopped. That's the way Carol and I feel about our relationship with one another. Carol is an absolutely fantastic woman. I am madly in love with her. She's been a wonderful mother to our daughter. She's a great grandmother. I mean, she's a wonderful grandmother. She's not a great grandmother yet. Man, that would have been negative. It had been before seven when we got married. We've got just a delightful daughter who is a delight to our hearts. She's our only child. She's married to a guy by the name of Tim Westberg, who is like a son to us, and we have two fantastic grandchildren, and if there are any of you here who'd like to hear about them, we'd be glad to take any amount of time you've got to tell you about Eric and Sonny. And they are missionaries with the Navigators in Mexico, and we have got the privilege right now of having them here with us. They came home for a little R&R and happened to pass through Mexico City on September the 19th, and they were in the earthquake down there and were in the ninth floor of a hotel right downtown where it was happening, and God, in a very miraculous way, spared their lives. We just, hardly a day goes by since that has happened that I don't thank the Lord for sparing their lives, because there were thousands of people killed all around them. And they're just delightful kids, and Carol has done a terrific job of raising Lynn. She's a wonderful cook. She's got a tremendous ministry. She's got the ability to write. I mean, I could go on and on, but I want you to meet Carol. So come on up, honey. But the thing that I really want to tell you is that the thing that we cherish most about our relationship with each other is that we are best friends. Here on this earth, this gal right here is my best friend, and I know that I am her best friend. And that doesn't just come by not working at it. It has to be worked at. And we're still working at it because we want to become better friends than ever. And so Carol's going to take some time now and just share with you some of the things that we've been learning over the years about this matter of really getting to understand one another, especially in the areas of where we're different. You know, we don't have any problems in the areas where we're alike, and we're alike in many ways. I mean, that's just gravy. But it's the areas where we're different that we've had the problems. And I'm sure that there are many of you who found the same thing. So we want to talk a little bit about that tonight. Now, I got to transfer all this gear to her. So if you want to shut off the camera or whatever it is, you got to put that somewhere.
Yeah. She said I could put it in my pocket.
Go.
One of my favorite cartoonists is Charles Schulz, who, as you know, writes Peanuts. And this cartoon is a tremendous example of what we want to talk about today. Peppermint Patty is sitting under a tree, and she's saying, "I'm not beautiful, Chuck. Do you think I'm not beautiful because I'm being punished for something I did in a former life?" And he says, "Well, I don't say anything, Chuck. I know I'm not beautiful. Don't say anything, Chuck. Say something, Chuck." And he says, "What? I mean, maybe it's wrong to complain about not being beautiful. Do you think it's wrong? Do you, Chuck?" "Well, I suppose I'm being kind of silly. You know, do you think I'm being silly? Do you, Chuck?" About this time, Snoopy comes along, and he gives Peppermint Patty a great big smack on the cheek. And the last frame shows Peppermint Patty and Snoopy walking away, and she's saying, "I'm glad you came along, Snoopy. Talking with Chuck isn't very satisfying." And Charlie Brown just sighs. As I read that, I thought it's obvious that Charlie Brown does not understand girls. But the truth is, most of us do not really understand one another. And there's so much to understand, isn't there, about our partners. We have to understand their idiosyncrasies, their hang-ups, their backgrounds, their extrovert-introvert differences, their personalities. And this really is a lifetime project. And yet the Bible tells us, the Bible's definition of marriage is that the two become one flesh. And we feel that means so much more than just physical. We feel it means becoming one vision, having one heart, one mind, one goal. Becoming, as it were, as Jack has said, best friends. Now, as I said, that is a lifelong project. Someone said that God has given us two eyes with which to see things from a slightly different point of view. If you only have one eye, you lose perspective, dimension. You see things flat. But when you have two eyes, you can see things in the round. We think that's a beautiful picture of marriage. God gave you two personalities so that you can complete one another. And your strengths will help him in his weaknesses, and his strengths will help you in your weaknesses, that you may be able to complete one another, to see life in the round. But that's only if you're willing to learn from one another, to grow, expand, and develop. And my friends, that takes humility, doesn't it? And that's why we keep going back to the fact that what we're going to be talking about this whole weekend is not possible without a vital relationship with God himself. Because the things that we're going to be talking about take maturity and unselfishness. And most of us just don't have that unless we have God. Proverbs 24:3-4 says, "By wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. And by knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches." By understanding, it is established. And yet, my friends, I wonder, if you think back over the last week, how many times have you really asked God for wisdom in your relationship with your spouse? How many times have you asked him for understanding? How many times have you asked him just for a deeper love for one another? Charlie Shedd says, "True love has no maximum." And I like that. True love has no maximum. There are always new areas ahead, always new vistas, always new excitements as far as our love relationship is concerned. But you know, God is the author of love. He is love. And unless we really ask God to adore our partners, sometimes it just doesn't come. So wisdom and love, pray for it day by day. Now, in order to become best friends, at least three things are necessary. First of all, as Jack has mentioned, we have to have God's help. He's the only one that can really do it for us. In Lawrence Crabb's excellent book, The Marriage Builder, he talks about three kinds of oneness in marriage. And the first kind of oneness that he talks about is spiritual oneness. And by that, he does not mean a horizontal relationship. He means a vertical relationship. And the fact is that we have got to know as individuals that our needs are really not met by our partners. Our needs are really met in God alone. Now, this is a vital thing to know and feel and understand. Because I've seen so many wives demand that their husbands meet their needs. And husbands realize that they are not capable of doing that. And so husbands back away and wives push harder. And husbands back away and wives push harder. Until wives have destroyed something that could have been very beautiful simply by making unrealistic demands. I was talking to a premarital counselor not long ago. And he gives tests on problems that might exist as two people enter into marriage. He said, you know what? The greatest problem that 90% of the couples have in an interview. And I said, what is that? And he said, unrealistic expectations of what marriage is going to be, of what their partners are going to be, of what needs are going to get met. And oh, my friends, that is so true. We've got to know that it's God that meets our needs. Now, he'll do it through our partners, but it is God that does that. And so that's the kind of spirit oneness that Dr. Crabb talks about. Then he talks about soul oneness, which is the horizontal that we're going to be spending most of our time in this weekend. How to get closer to one another with God's help. And then, of course, he talks about physical oneness, the body oneness. in the physical relationship. So first of all, we need God's help. Secondly, I need to become a student of myself. I have to know me in order to explain me to Jack. Now, for many years, I didn't know me. And we suffered because of it. There would be times when Jack would come in and I would, there'd be something wrong. And there would be a few times when it didn't have to do with him. And so he, of course, when I grow silent, he has to ask me what's the matter. And, of course, you wives never do this, but, you know, Jack would come in and say, "Hi, honey." Say, "Hello." He'd say, "Yeah, anything wrong?" "No." "Come on, I can tell there's something wrong. What is it?" "Never mind." And I would withdraw. Well, now, part of the time, that was because I was giving him the silent treatment. We'll talk about that tomorrow. But some of the time, it was because there was something the matter. There was something the matter with me, but I didn't even know what. I was feeling discouraged, down, frustrated, but I couldn't pinpoint the cause. Now, that's not fair, is it? It's really not fair to our marriage partner. What do you do in a case like that? Something that God has led me to do is that I go to the Lord who made me. And I said, "Lord, I pray James 1:5, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him." Ooh, I hang on to that. And I say, "Lord, I just need wisdom to know me. I don't understand why I'm feeling the way I'm feeling. And so, how can I tell Jack about how I'm feeling or why I'm feeling that way when I don't even know?" It's tremendous. It's amazing. It's beautiful the way God answers and gives us that insight into ourselves. So I've got to do some study. I've got to do some praying. But I've got to know me. And thirdly, I have got to understand my husband. Ephesians 4:32 says in the Phillips, "Be kind to one another. Be understanding." That's a command. "Be as ready to forgive others as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you." Three vital and important commands just in that one little verse for our marriages. Be kind to one another. So often we're the least kind to those we love the most, aren't we? And if you don't believe me, just listen to mothers in supermarkets. This little poem I liked. "They were single and went walking, and her heart did skip a beat. As she stumbled on the sidewalk, he murmured, 'Careful, sweet. Now the wedding bells have rung.' And when they walk the selfsame street, when she stumbles on the sidewalk, he just yells, 'Pick up your feet.'" All too true, isn't it? Be kind to one another. Be understanding. A man once said, "A long life is barely enough for a man and a woman to understand each other. And to be understood is to love." The man who understands one woman is qualified to understand pretty well everything. And the reverse is true. And yet, when Adam was lonely, God made for him not 10 friends, but one wife. And I'm glad. And then be forgiving. Some of you probably need to start right there. You've been hurt and hurt and hurt. And so every time you've been hurt, you've built up a wall a little higher. And till that wall is so high now that you're not communicating. And you need to start right there. Be forgiving. Be as ready to forgive as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. How much has God, for Christ's sake, forgiven you? Everything. A man once said, "When we quarrel, my wife becomes historical." His friend said, "Don't you mean hysterical?" And he says, "No, I mean historical. She brings up everything I ever did." Proverbs 17:9 in the Living says, "Love forgets mistakes. Nagging about them parts the best of friends." But let's get back to understanding. One minister's wife said this, "If I could give one piece of advice, and only one, to young brides, it would be this. Study your man. Study him as if he were some rare and strange and fascinating animal, which he is. Study his likes and dislikes, his strengths and weaknesses, his moods and mannerisms. Just loving a man is fine, but it's not enough. To live with one successfully, you have to know him, and to know him, you have to study him. Look around you and decide how many of the best marriages you know are ones where a wife, in a deep sense, actually knows her husband better than he knows himself. Knows what pleases him, knows what upsets him, knows what makes him laugh or makes him angry, knows when he needs encouragement, knows when he's too charged up about something and needs to be held back, knows, in other words, exactly what makes him tick. Do you know your husband that well? They're always changing, so that too is a lifetime project. Do you know your wife that well? That is your responsibility. I'm going to take 1 minute and give you a little stand-up quiz. So get out a little piece of paper, okay? Got a piece of paper? How well do you know your spouse? Question number one, and don't peek. Question number one. What is your spouse's favorite color? What is your spouse's favorite color? Question two. What is your spouse's favorite foreign food? Italian, Chinese. What is your spouse's favorite foreign food? Third question. What is weighing heaviest on your spouse's heart right now? What is the thing that's concerning them the most right now? Okay, stand up and compare answers. Come on, stand up. I know you need it. Okay, time's up. We're going to be finished in about 15 minutes, so if you can stand that in the one part of your anatomy that needs it. Well. Okay, how many got all three right? Very good. About a third of you did well. Do you know your spouse's toothbrush color? Good. There is so much to really learn about one another. I laughed and cried at the same time with this little paragraph from Elizabeth Elliot's Discipline, The Glad Surrender. She said, a couple I know had been married only a week or two when the wife went out shopping. The husband wondered what he might do while she was gone that would please and surprise her and show her how much he loved her. A brilliant plan came to mind. He got down on hands and knees and scrubbed the kitchen floor. It was a demeaning task in his opinion, and he felt exceedingly humble while performing it. How amazed Anne would be. He waited in eager anticipation for her return, thinking how blessed it is to give. She drove in the driveway, breezed into the kitchen, set the grocery bags on the counter, and glanced at the floor. Oh, the floor is clean. Thank you, honey, was all she said, and went about putting things away. The man told me he went into a three-day funk. He was hurt. He was insulted. He was not properly appreciated. And the blessing of giving drained out in an instant because he had not received the kind of thanks he had expected. Anne had no idea what the trouble was. What she did not know was that her husband had never heard of a man's doing such a thing as scrubbing a floor for his wife, especially voluntarily, having thought of it all by himself. What he did not know was that in his wife's family, no woman ever did the job. Her father considered it a man's job and did it as a matter of course. Of such things, marriages are broken. Because we're not really understanding one another. Now I'm going to describe for you just four things of how Jack and I are different. We could describe 25 at least. We're only going to take four. Now, this is not to say that men are like this and women are like this. Don't misunderstand me. Jack and I are like this. And if you find, you men find yourself identifying with me, it does not mean you are feminine. It just means you're different than Jack and me, okay? In fact, sometimes we find just totally opposite of Jack and me. However, we have only found one couple that said they were alike in these areas, which was interesting. And usually just turned around. Jack is a very objective person. I am a very subjective person. To Jack, a fact is a fact is a fact is a fact. Jack takes a detached view of things. To me, a fact is slightly more than a fact or slightly less than a fact, depending on what mood I'm in. I can't be detached about anything. Now, the implications of this are vast. Jack sees things much more realistically than I do. He sees the bigger picture. He thinks in concept form better than I do. It used to be that Jack would be having a bunch of men for a meeting, and I'd be fixing coffee in the kitchen, and the men would just be coming to clashes over an issue. And I'd be in the kitchen just thinking, ooh, they're about to come to blows. The next minute, laughing, patting each other on the back, best of friends. That's Jack's objectivity coming out. However, I've also realized that if I say those same things to Jack, he loses his objectivity. To know that. Now, this comes out in all sorts of ways in our relationship. A man and a woman will come over for dinner, and the man will say, where'd you get this meat? And Jack will say, well, down at the corner grocery. And I'll say, why? What's wrong with it? Jack will say, the Joneses are busy and can't come tomorrow. And I'll say, I wonder what we did to offend them. Now, you see, subjective people do not take teasing well. Jack comes in and says, hi, chubby. I do not take it objectively. Sometimes our subjectivity borders on the ridiculous. I heard about one man who came in and said to his wife, you know, honey, you have been working so hard all week, cooking and cleaning and taking care of the kids. Tonight I'm going to take you out for a good dinner. And she burst into tears. Now, see, some of you didn't get that. She had picked up a good dinner. What have I been cooking for you all week? In order to understand, we have to study our mate. Jack is very essential-minded. I am very detail-minded. Jack focuses in on the main subject, the most important thing to be considered. I, on the other hand, think in detail, and you'll soon find I talk that way, too. Now, this caused all kinds of problems. For instance, when Lynn was small, Jack would go off for a week-long conference, and he would come home, and of course I'd meet him at the door with a hug and a kiss, starved for adult conversation. I had been home with my child, the washing machine, dial a prayer, you know, and so I would greet him at the door, and I would say, oh, honey, tell me all about that conference. And he would tell me all about that conference in 10 minutes flat. And I would think, he doesn't care enough to tell me about that conference. And if he doesn't care enough to tell me about that conference, then he must not love me the way I long to be loved. On the other hand, I would start to tell him about the neighbor down the street who ran for Senate 3 years ago, whose mother-in-law ended up in the insane asylum, and she was the one that, and about this time I would look at Jack and his eyes would be sort of glazed and crossed, and I would be thinking, he's not listening, and I was right. And as I thought about that, I thought, well, if he's not listening, then he doesn't care about what I care about, and if he doesn't care about what I care about, then he doesn't love me the way I long to be loved. Now, I was wrong. And we both had to learn that it's not wrong, it's just different. Remember that phrase, not wrong, just different. And so as we began to understand, I began to study Jack, and I realized that when he came back from that conference and he told me about it in 10 minutes flat, that he, in his way, really had told me about that conference. Why? He had focused in on the main thing, the most important things to be considered. And in his way, he had told me all about the conference. Now, since then, he has learned to take notes on some of those really important issues like who got engaged and who's going to have a baby and best meal he had. You know, some of those really important things. On the other hand, I really want you to know that I have learned how to condense a really good four-hour story into 10 minutes flat. But the other side of that coin is Jeff realizes that sometimes I've just got to get it all out. And he's trained himself to listen. And I appreciate that. Now, essential-minded people and detail-minded people cause a lot of problems because detail-minded people are impressed by and distracted by little things. Jack will say, that's a good-looking car, but how does it run? That's the main thing, isn't it? I'll say, I just don't like the color. It's the detail. Jack will say, I like that speaker's idea. And I'll say, did you notice that his shirt matched his tie? Now, I'm exaggerating, obviously, and I noticed the speaker's ideas. But I also noticed something different. Not wrong, just different. Thirdly, Jack is very
logical.
I am very emotional. Jack is inclined to study the evidence and in a step-by-step reasoning process reach a conclusion. I rely on my intuition, my instinct, my feelings to reach a conclusion. Interestingly enough, many times the same conclusion. And my way's faster. Now, someone has suggested that a person's mind for detail is really intuition. And I think there's a lot of truth to this. For instance, Jack and I can go into a similar situation, the same situation, and notice two entirely opposite things. I see that raised eyebrow. I hear that tone of voice. I'm aware of that body posture. All of these little details are filtered through the computer of my mind and come out in intuition, a feeling, if you will. Jack has learned to use this. And often when we come away from a situation now, he will say, honey, how did you feel about that situation? I cannot tell him that I saw a raised eyebrow. All I can tell him is that this is the way I felt about it. He filters that through his very objective grid. And we go back to that situation. He can ask some very wonderful questions. And we come away with a picture in the round, you see. A much better picture than either one of us could by ourselves. That's the way we can learn to complete each other. But it's also what absolutely drives us up the wall when we do not understand. And accept the fact that it's not wrong. It's just different. Now, logical people think in a straight line. Emotional people think like this, all around a subject. And we talk that way, too. Sad to say. I might say, before we're to leave for a dinner engagement, I suppose I ought to go change. And Jack will say, well, why don't you? And I'll say, well, don't you like what I've got on? And he'll say, well, it's okay, but you said you were going to change. And I'll say, oh, I was just saying that to see if it was okay not to. Now, the princess is terrible. I mean, it really is. And tomorrow we're going to talk about communication, and one of the primary rules of communication is to say what you mean and mean what you say. But you know, I'm never going to get there. I'm working on it, and believe it or not, there are times I say, erase all that. What I really mean is, and I really try to come at it. But you know, I'm not going to get there because of the fact that in my emotional nature, I appeal to your emotions. And so you see, it's not enough. Jack has finally realized it's not enough when I come in and say, oh, how do you like my new dress? And if he says, oh, I like it, I'm liable to take it back. Well, now why? He didn't get enough emotion into it, you see, and so I haven't believed him. Now, he's really learning. He's done that well. He really gets some emotion in there, so I believe him. Lastly, Jack uses speech to convey facts and ideas. I use speech a great deal of the time to express feelings and emotions. we're looking at a beautiful moon. And I'll say, oh, isn't that a beautiful moon? Well, what am I saying? That moon makes me feel romantic. And if Jack comes back with, oh, yes, that's bright enough to shoot a golf ball by. He actually did that one time, but he smiled. I'd be hurt. It's raining outside, and I look out and I say, oh, it's raining outside. Well, what am I saying? I could be saying a number of things. I could be saying, oh, it's raining outside. That makes me feel energetic. I'm going to clean house like crazy all day. Or I could be saying, oh, it's raining outside. That makes me feel depressed. But chances are I am expressing an emotion. Jack looks outside. He says, raining outside. What is he saying? The heavens have parted and little drops of moisture are falling to the ground. He is expressing a fact. I'm expressing an emotion. Now, friends, literally, you will find out through the weekend that I do exaggerate, but I'll try to tell you when I am, okay? Literally, this is literal. I have cried buckets. Hours, days over this. Because I have not understood that it wasn't a matter of Jack loving me or not loving me. It was a matter he was different than I was. I remember just as I was really studying this about my husband, I backed out of the garage, and I backed a little too hastily, and I took a little part of the garage with the back fender. And I came in, I said, oh, I feel just awful. You can't imagine what it was like when that car went crunch. And just like this, Jack says, never mind that. What happened? My first thought was, oh, he doesn't care how I feel. And if he doesn't care how I feel, then he must not love me the way I long to be loved. But instead, because I was studying my husband then, my second thought was, no, that's okay. Jack does care. He just has got to have the facts first. And so it didn't take me buckets of tears that time. I understood. And oh, how wonderful that is as you grow together to complete one another and become best friends. And I want to close with just a little poem. It expresses how I feel because of our love that has grown in understanding. It says, I love you not only for what you are, but for what I am when I'm with you. I love you for not only for what you have made of yourself, but for what you are making of me. I love you for the part of me that you bring out. I love you for putting your hand into my heaped up heart and passing over all the foolish, weak things that you can't help dimly seeing there, and for drawing out into the light all the beautiful belongings that no one else had looked quite far enough to find. I love you because you are helping me to make of the lumber of my life not a tavern, but a temple. Of the works of my everyday, not a reproach, but a song.